good morning yet again.
Yep. Hey, we're here. That's what else you want me to say? Yep. So far it is a good morning. It is a glorious, glorious blue skied Saturday morning in Wisconsin.
Yep, and same here in Connecticut. It is beautiful out. It was beautiful last night, except for my usual coyotes screaming at me as I sat outside. Mm-hmm. And it's supposed to be nice all weekend. It's this is the first weekend in September. It's Labor Day weekend, so nice long weekend. If you now, I don't know when this will drop, but if you're thinking about the path, this is the weekend when California, you know, basically is in the hundreds right now, and that's where all the eyes are at the moment. Mm-hmm. Glad I'm not out there in the 110 degree weather. Ugh.
Yeah, it's quite the opposite here. we're gonna have to turn the heat on. I think the high next week is gonna be in the 50s.
I did see it's gonna go down to like 40 in Colorado on Tuesday, which,
yeah,
wow. Wow. Weird.
Let's start bringing the firewood in.
Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, I will say that since it is now September, I do plan on actually having an Oktoberfest. We're close enough.
That's fair. That is fair.
Won't do it in August. Just won't do it. But now that it's September, it's okay. And by the time you listen to this, it's going to be close enough to October that the Oktoberfest will be gone. And all the quote-unquote winter warmers will be out there, whatever that means.
Yeah, whatever.
we'll talk about that in November.
Yeah. You betcha.
Yeah. Nutmeg does not make a beer a winter beer.
No, it doesn't.
Okay, so stuff. Housekeeping. Stuff. Whatever you want to call it.
Yes, housekeeping.
Do-do-do. Once again, we want to thank Sandy Ridge Farms, our newest sponsor. And there, if you go on our website right now, you'll see a link to them at the bottom of every page, every single page, sometimes twice. No, just the bottom of every page. Because they're running a Labor Day sale through October 9th across their website for all plants. And also, if you're not buying plants and you're buying other stuff, anytime, Hopnology, the code Hopnology is a 5% coupon. You can use it on their website. You can use it when you call them. You can use it in skywriting. I don't care how you use it, but yell Hopnology and they'll give you some money back.
Awesome.
Isn't that great?
That's awesome.
So while you're on the website, we've had, you know, we get a lot of questions about things, and we're at the point now, having done this for, oh Lord, a year and a half already. And they're still letting – no one's – I'm still waiting for the knock on the door with someone with some strange, you know, men in black badge going, it's time for this to be over, guys.
Yeah, you're done. Mm-hmm. This really needs to be done.
Yep. But after a year and a half, we're starting to get questions where our response is, yeah, we did talk about that on the podcast, but I don't know which one it was.
Where is it? Yeah.
So we finally went through, we organized it, and then we – put some tags, some categories on all of them. And if you go to our website now on the right-hand side, you will see all of the podcasts by topic groupings, which is actually really helpful even for us to look at it and say, did we talk about this already? Because we might have talked about this. So there's an aroma science category, a market category. There's a few different ones for things in the field, like plants has its own category, disease and pests has its own category. Even rants has its own category. And I think it's kind of funny that the last three episodes I've posted all fit in the rant category.
Uh-oh.
Yep. So that's when we need to reevaluate, as we just did before starting to record. Okay, what are we talking about the next couple of weeks? Because our opinions are starting to take precedence.
Yeah.
So,
well, that should be no surprise to anybody who's listened to, at least a half an episode. Mm-hmm. Unapologetic about that.
Yeah. So I may have to change my expectation of what gets labeled a rant, you know, ranting for a few minutes here and there. Maybe that's not a full-on rant episode, but I got to think about that a little more. Anyway, point being, if you're looking for something specific, while we love to hear from you and you can continue reaching out to us, you can also just look at that list by topic. And if you click on one of the topics, it'll take you to a trimmed down episode list of everything that's somewhat related to what you're looking for, including sciencey science. I had to make that a topic.
Of course.
Not sure about the spelling for sciencey there, but I'm not sure about the spelling for anything in those episodes. So,
That's fair. They're all made up words anyway, right?
Completely made up words.
All words are made up. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Well, There we go, then.
I think that's it. Nice. I think that's it. So now what? So it is early September, which means you're listening to this in mid to late September. And it's harvest is probably done.
Yeah, I hope so, at least in North America.
Yep.
Yeah, and so pursuant to the topic that you just discussed about the index on the website, you know, I could have sworn we had a whole episode on post-harvest field care, but I could not find it. So for those of the listeners out there that know our catalog better than we do, let us know what episode number that is, if you don't mind. But we are going to at least dedicate an episode just to post-harvest field care, because I think we probably touched on it across multiple.
Yeah, I think we have. And I think there may be one in that operations section of post-harvest equipment storage. I know we talked about cleaning your harvester and cleaning your pelletizer and putting them away properly. But to your point, they might have been part of a larger conversation and not all about, you know, everything you've got to do post-harvest.
Yeah, and I think that's what it was. But so let's talk about that. Again, that was a recommendation coming out of the Discord Hopnologists group. Thank you, guys. Good topic. So let's just get into it. We'll see what happens. And that'll probably end up being, you know, operations/rant episode. That's most of our rants, I guess. Right?
They are. Well, I've already complained about Christmas beers, and it's September.
Yeah.
And right, I'm complaining proactively, even though I haven't seen any yet, because that's just who I am.
Well, you know they're in the fermenter right now.
Yeah, they gotta be.
Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about the field. Let's talk about dealing with the field and after harvest. So the
season's over. So can't I just walk away from the field? It'll be there when I come back in March.
What do you think my answer to that is?
You're probably going to say I can do whatever I want.
That's exactly right. You can. It's your field. You can do whatever you want. I wouldn't do that, but you could do that. I think what happens, there's some things I think, now granted, this is for those of us who are in temperate zones where, you know, we experience seasons and plant dormancy, because I realize not all of you do, so bear with me. But in general, we are going to proceed as if the plant is going to get a dormant period outside. So as we would, let's call it traditional post-harvest plant maintenance. You've got the binds chopped out of the field. The place looked like a bomb went off. What do you do? Right? Well, first thing you should do is have a beer, because damn, well done. You made it through another season. Those plants are not going anywhere out there. So you can take a couple of days to sort of gather yourself and clean up the harvest shed and whatever you're doing. If you're pelletizing, obviously, that's probably your next big go-to. Sometimes even that can wait. So just, you know, take a breather. Mm-hmm. I think you deserve it. Once you start feeling guilty, now get back to work. So it should be after about two-thirds of the way through your first beer. Then you're going to look at your field and say, okay, I got to get out there. I want to clean all this up, make it look nice, or what have you. Just chill for a second, because those plants, depending on how you harvest them, right? If you decapitation harvested and you've got stumps left out there in the field with no leaves on them, they're not going anywhere. I like to wait till they go dormant myself before I get out there and do any more cutting on them, because cutting is an invigorating activity. When you prune, you can force new growth. So you just did a hell of a pruning. So maybe just let them lie. And now some of you may say, well, you know, what about if I don't decapitation harvest and I just, you know, I'm hand harvesting and I put my plants back up? Different game. You still have a plant that is very susceptible to late season downy mildew. That means your fungicide regimen has to continue. That is something a lot of people don't consider when they think, oh, yeah, I'm done harvesting, season's over, everything's great, and I'm just going to let my plants go to sleep and get super wicked infected. No, you can't do that. So you would continue with your fungicide regimen until the temperatures get low enough that you're outside of that downy mildew risk threshold we talked about back in, I think, was it winter? Mm-hmm. So I think it's 50 degrees Fahrenheit. 50, 45, I don't remember. But I'm sure someone will go back, use that new index and go back and find it and listen to the past. Anyway, okay.
I know it's there.
So, you know, keep that in mind. If you're putting your plants back up, yeah, they'll photosynthesize and they're going to produce starch and it's going to go into the tubers in the crown, but which is great for the following season for more energy. That doesn't mean that you just get a pass and you don't have to take care of your plants for the rest of the season. That also includes watering and irrigation, although you could cut way back on those. So that's a caveat, I think, to post-harvest.
Sure.
Care.
Sure. But, I mean, heck, I take my tomatoes out of my vegetable garden and I just let it sit until I have to clean it all out in the spring.
Right. Well, okay. So that was going to awesome segue. That's my next point. Because I think aside from, you know, the plants going dormant and just sort of letting them do their natural, you know, slide into dormancy, the way I always looked at it was, what is my spring usually like? The term shit show comes to mind. because usually for me in southern Wisconsin, it was by the time I could actually get into the field to do physical work, it was also time to, you know, hang twine. Mm-hmm. And then you're immediately into training. And it's like I had no time or very little time to do any of that yard cleanup. So that really meant fall was my time to do that. So I would, you know, let the plants do what they're going to do. You could continue to go out there and do row maintenance, you know, weed maintenance, whatever you're going to do. But now's the time to go back and handle all of those little things that need to be taken care of before spring. So things we would do is like go out and like cut any old twine off of the cables, get rid of it, because you are going to be bitching the next year. Like knots are in the wrong place. I'm moving old twine all over the place. Just go out there and just clean it up. You have time. Sometimes, you know, even trellis work. It's like, all right, well, that one sagged a lot more than I was expecting, so I'm going to tighten it up. It's not going to relax much over winter anyway. So plus, if you're in a very cold climate, the steel is going to contract and it's really not going to droop all that much. Any sort of dirt work you need to do before it turns into a sloppy mess in the spring, do it now. You know, sometimes it's even rehilling could be done now. Get those weeds buried because they're not likely going to be able to poke through and reestablish before it gets too cold. They're going to die. Those sorts of things. Just be on top of it. Get all that cleaned up so you don't have to deal with it come spring.
Yep. Or you could do none of that. And when spring hits, you can remember and say, oh man, a couple hours last fall would have really saved me days.
Yep. Absolutely. And there's, you know, those are just some things, you know, off the top of my head, but maybe we need to divide this into like plant care, like horticulture, and just like operations.
Sure.
So let's look at plant care. James, how do I know when my hops are dormant? Well, if there's any leaves left on them, and depending on how high up you cut it, you're going to see them start to kind of, you're going to freak out because you think, oh my God, look how those things are full of downy mildew. No, they're probably just going dormant. So they'll get kind of yellowish green, and then they'll get, you know, brown spots on them, and then the leaves are dying, they're senescing. So they're just going to dry up and crumble and go away. The woody vine itself, depending on how thick they were, like how vigorous the plant was in the season, may or may not actually snap off of the crown. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. I don't know if it's variety dependent or what, but it just doesn't seem to be, to me, to be any rhyme or reason. Sometimes they're really firm and they stay attached. Sometimes they don't. That's a pretty sure sign that plant is going to sleep. Hmm. What I found was that sometime around, right, so we're talking upper half of the United States here. So sometime around mid-October to the end of October, it's sleepy time. They're not coming. They're not waking back up again, even if you get a warm snap. I mean, we've had warm snaps in October and into November. Heck, I remember one year I was augering new poles for an expansion on Christmas Eve day in a sweatshirt. It was like 64 degrees. And it was crazy, right? But I was making use of that time.
Sure.
And, but the light, the photo period had changed so much. Those plants were not waking up. It was asleep time. And that's precisely why plants use photoperiod over temperature as their cue for dormancy, because temperature is all wacky. It's all over the place. Photoperiod, unless something is dramatically wrong with the planet, like we're hurtling towards the sun or away from it, photoperiod is not going to change much.
Stay tuned for 2021 for that to be the next problem.
That's it. Is exactly. Where was I going with this? Oh, yeah. So you've got these plants that they're asleep. So oftentimes I would go out there once those plants are dormant, even into early November, when I got a lovely warm day, like it would be bright, sunny, where the ground temperature is, you know, from all that incident solar radiation is warm. It's like probably 70, 75 degrees. Those plants that are still green, the weeds, herbicide time. Your plants are asleep. And so I would go right over the top of the mound with a broad spectrum herbicide. And people are like, what? Like what? Roundup? Yep. Like glyphosate. Hit those perennial weeds that are still green and photosynthesizing. And they have to be photosynthesizing and not dormant in order for glyphosate to really work. But I would do that almost every year where I needed to. It made my spring weed load so much lower by doing that. The ones I had to be careful with were thistle for me. That was always my just bane. And I'd have to use a different herbicide on that just because the glyphosate wouldn't touch it. But yeah, absolutely. I would spray right over my mounds once those plants are asleep and with absolutely no ill effects. Now, that was because I knew when my dormancy period was that the plants were asleep. Friends that are in, you know, the southern part of the states or in warmer climes where they don't get so cold that they never really go dormant, you better be damn careful when you're doing that. To the point, even some of our friends in Australia, I would be very careful about spraying herbicide over mounds that plants that you're not sure whether they actually achieve dormancy or not, because you could see some damage. So you heard it here.
Yeah, do it, but do it carefully. That's interesting. And the timing on that, you're better off waiting longer to do that.
If you can. Yeah, if you can. Even if you get down into temperatures that are, it doesn't have to snow for those plants, right, to be cold enough to go dormant outside. You know, it can get into the, just even into the 40s Fahrenheit. And, you know, what is that, 12? C, 10C, to be just fine. You know, that's enough for dormancy to occur. Mm-hmm. It might take a little longer, but then you also are more likely, when your low temperatures are that high, if that makes sense, you're more likely to have actively photosynthesizing perennial weeds anyway through that period. So whack them.
And it's one of those things, I think, that you're just not going to know how effective it is until you have a season when you don't do it.
Yep. Exactly. And even this year, with the number of people that said, oh my God, James, we tried the pre-emergent, and why didn't I do this before? Mm-hmm. You know, in the spring. And it's the same thing with fall weed treatment. People are like, oh my Lord, why didn't I do this before? Well, probably because you're afraid you're going to hurt your plants.
It's a reasonable fear.
It's an absolutely reasonable fear. But it's like, even if you're going to spot spray, do it now at that point. Not like right now, it's still too early, but certainly in that October, November time frame. Now there's folks up in, you know, listening to us in Canada, they're like, yeah, right. I'm gonna have snow on the ground at that point. Well, you're kind of screwed then. Sorry. I can't what do you want me to say? I can't, yeah. It's gonna get too cold too quick, and that treatment's not likely to work well for you. Spot spraying is probably your option, but that's good weed control. The other thing too that I see people do is if they're going to weed control in the fall for hilling up and throwing soil up over onto their mounds, you're going to be stirring up weed seeds when you do that. But if you do it late enough, they're going to germinate and then get whacked by the winter. And they're not going to be able to survive. So that's also a pretty good weed control, because then you'd go, if you didn't do that, and let's say you're going to hill up in the spring, you're going to stir up all those weed seeds. But now there's nothing that's going to knock them back. No temperature is going to knock them back, really. So they're going to get established. So not a bad idea to hill up in the fall if you can do that, or if that's part of your maintenance mechanism. Some of our friends in really wet climates, and certainly warmer climates, like in Virginia, Carolinas, whatnot, you've got to be careful doing that, because certainly you get a lot of rain in the winter, and that excess moisture in the soil over a buried crown like that can actually cause crown rot. Whereas friends further north and certainly further south, where you're into the more temperate regions, shouldn't have that problem.
That's a lot to do.
That's a lot to do. And that's just weeds, dude. Mm-hmm. I mean, people are like, oh, should I fertilize them? Should I put them to bed? I'm like, it's not a lawn, okay? You're not putting your winter feed and weed down, okay? Unless you have a nutrient deficiency that you have to correct, I don't recommend fall feeding. There's too much opportunity for leech over the winter.
Although,
except...
You just said, I mean, unless you have a nutrient deficiency, if you're doing soil amendments now, though.
That's where I was going, exactly. So you could be amending soil, and, you know, even organic matter is fine. Well, James, that's fertilizer. No, I'm talking compost. I'm not necessarily talking about going out and putting NPK down. You want to put compost down, you want to put manure down, go ahead, you can do that, but understand why you're doing it. Do you need it because, well, you know, hey, it's good for the soil? Yeah, no. Not all the time it isn't. There were at least twice this year I was talking with some of our hopnologists about that very fact. And they say, well, I'm going to spread this manure. Why? Well, because. Yeah, no, that's not an answer. Well, I here's my nutrient analysis on my soil, and this is what I need. Okay. And how do you know you're going to get that from the manure? Well, it's manure. Shut up, James. So it's the same thing here. You got to make sure that you know what you're putting on your field for the fall. If it's full of nitrogen, which, you know, certainly if you didn't separate the liquid from the solids, then yeah, it's going to be full of nitrogen, but you're not going to keep much of that nitrogen. It's going to leach or flash or things like that. You're going to keep other nutrients. So if you're going to put on organic matter as a source of food, know what's in it. If you're putting it on for organic matter, like you've got a heavy soil or something like that, perfect. Knock yourself out. Get it on there. Or you have a really light soil, sandy soil, and you want to add organic matter, perfect. Now's the time to do that. Or any other, you know, amendment. If you've got a lime, you've got a sulfur, you got to do anything like that, this is a good time.
Good, 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 good use of that, you know, as we say in quotes, off-season.
Off-season, mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I would say, people sometimes, or at least me, if you've got obsessive compulsive disorder like I do, you see all those remnant stumps and vines sticking up there, and you just have to go out and cut them off because otherwise you're not going to sleep at night. Yeah, wait until they're completely dormant to do that. Otherwise, you're going to be chewing up the crown. People are like, how do you do that, James? I don't have a big farm. I don't have all this fancy equipment. You got a lawnmower, don't you? Set that blade all the way down and go and scalp those crowns.
Yep.
That's really all people do. The carpers, as they call them, where you see the what they call carp and hill method, where they go in and they cut the crown way down. It's like this horizontal spinning saw blade, and it sort of reforms the mound behind it, but much lower. You know, they're doing that in the spring. It's sort of the same thing, but the reason they're doing it that way is because they've hilled up all season and they have to knock that soil hill back down. Otherwise, their crown's never going to be able to push through it. Mm-hmm. But you do the same thing, even with just your lawnmower. Go out there once they're dormant and buzz them off. Get rid of it, clean it all up, get ready for the next season.
When we started and you mentioned scalping earlier, and you said something to the effect of it's an invigorating activity, and all I could think of was you with a huge smile on your face out there scalping crowns. And then you clarified that if they're not dormant, they will come. It's a plant invigorating activity. But
James invigorating activity.
I now need an Instagram picture of you with a ridiculous shit-eating ear-to-ear grin skipping through the field with a lawnmower. Invigorating scalping the crowns is.
So invigorating. Mm-hmm. And fair enough. Most seasons, I didn't get around to doing that until early spring, just because, you know, we were pelletizing and we would go right out of harvest into pelletizing. And when we had our small mill, I mean, it would take us months to pelletize.
Yep.
And we just didn't have the bandwidth. So I would do it as early as I could in the spring before everything got sloppy. Sometimes the ground was still frozen.
So per our conversation a few weeks ago about contract pelletizing, and if you're sending your hops out to be pelletized elsewhere, you can spend every day calling your pelletizer, bugging them, when are they ready, when are they ready, when are they ready? Or you can do some of this stuff to take your mind off it.
Well, that it needs doing anyway. So just sure. Get out there and do it. Get her done. Again, those of us in the colder zones, there's only so much time we have to do field work because it's going to snow at some point, and usually a lot. And at that point, you're not done. I mean, I've certainly done trellis work and whatnot in the winter with snow on the ground. It is not fun. Mm-hmm. So I would much rather do as much work as I need to get my farm in shape before that snow flies. Even if it's, you know, the same temperature, but with no snow, snow just makes everything that much harder to do. Get it done.
So that sounds good for, that's a lot of plant work to get done, but it's all, and it's all preventative. It's, you know, to your point, it's all stuff that you know, could end up doing in the spring, but man, oh man, isn't it nice to get it done in the fall?
Oh yeah, absolutely. There's not enough time in the spring for temperate zone, small scale hop growers. There just isn't. So if you're banking on that and you just want to be done, you're going to screw yourself next year. So future you is going to be very pissed off. Because something's always going to go wrong and you're never going to have enough time. So do it now while you have the time. Easy.
Yep.
What else is there? That's plant stuff.
That's plants. So we talked about operations as well, the things you want to do on that side of things.
Yeah. So fix stuff. Everything that broke, fix it now. Don't wait, because I guarantee you at least one, there's going to be one thing that you're just like, yeah, I'll do that later. And then you forget about it all winter and you go to use it next spring. And you're like, son of a bitch. Mm-hmm. I guarantee it. Fix it now. And if you don't know what needs fixing, make a list. You know, we talked about, like you said, harvester and dryer cleanup and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, things operationally. Blow your irrigation lines out. And some people take their irrigation lines in every harvest year so they can do dirt work, you know, and hill up and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, we never did that. We didn't use the mounding method. So get out there, blow your irrigation lines out, get the water out of them, because inevitably you're going to have an issue with cracked pipes. Sure. And that really sucks in the spring when you go to turn your system on and it's freaking geysers all over the place. Ugh. Yeah. So get that all taken care of, Al.
And along the lines with fixing stuff, I would say is organizing stuff. We've talked before about the whole, how many of this particular wrench did we buy and then rebuy and then rebuy, only to find six of them under the table when it was time to finish clean up for the year.
Yeah.
Get your stuff back in order where it needs to be. I think you said you had someone who helped with the harvester who had a pegboard right there.
Yep.
And just so when, damn it, when after you use something, put it back so you know where it is. There's so much of that organizational work that needs to be done just so you can start spring fresh without, you know, spending an arm and a leg on odds and ends.
Yeah, that will eat you alive, and not just in money, but in time. Mm-hmm. Because you're like, I was just at the, you know, I love going to the hardware store. Just, it's my thing. But when you, that fourth trip of the day really, really grinds your gears.
Because Especially when they're all your fault because you didn't think ahead.
Exactly. You didn't think ahead. And one way, it's 20 minutes. I mean, so you make four trips, you've burned up a third of your day, right, of productive time. And it's right during the best productive time, too. And a lot of times you have people waiting on you. Don't do it. Nope. Be smart. Don't be like James.
If you've ever been angry when you get home from the supermarket and you forgot the one thing, or you get home and you're told, oh, we also needed X. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Magnify that a few times.
So yeah, organizing is a good idea. Blowing out your irrigation system. And if you've still got time, like I said, fixing stuff is always the thing that we do. Trellis work, get that done now. That's one less thing you'll have to do in the spring. And maybe next spring, you'll actually have time to focus on things like starting to hire labor early and organizing your farm operations for the year and monitoring for emergence and doing things that you seem to scramble to do every spring. Get an earlier start on it because you don't have to worry about having all of those little extra things that are just going to suck your time up like nobody's business. Those of us who are processing, pelletizing, you're going to have a huge urge to jump right into that immediately after harvest done because it's something about our linear brains that just wants all these steps done and then I can relax.
Right.
Freaking pelletize when there's snow on the ground. Because that can be done then. Fall cleanup, I think, is more important. Store your hops for a little bit. It's okay. Yeah. Go do your fall cleanup, do all that work, then get to your pelletizing. Make the best use of your time.
Yeah, that's an interesting point because it is counterintuitive and it's counter-emotional. You just, to your point, you want to finish. You want to get, and you want to see those pellets and you want to see the packages and you want to get them in the brewer's hands. But you're absolutely right. You do have certain times of the year that are more effectively used for certain things. And yeah, you're not pelletizing outside. If you are, we got another conversation ahead of us.
We do. Yeah, that's the things, health code. Anyway, that's the quick rundown. I mean, it's not a really intense topic, right, in terms of like science and, oh no, you got to be careful and you have to watch and measure these things. I'm like, no. Let the plants go to sleep. Take care of the weeds. Take care of the dirt work. Use your time wisely. I would say if there's one thing I do not want you to do is to fertilize, right? Just don't put fertilizer down because you think they need it because, you know, I'm going to help them go to sleep. Don't do that. That actually can stir them up and wake them up a little bit, and then you could get some winter kill.
Yeah, who's ever let their kid have sugar at 10 o'clock at night? That's effectively what you're doing.
Pretty much, yes. That's a very good analogy. Anyway, that's all I got on that topic.
Yeah, that...
I'm tired just thinking about it now.
And yet it feels... I always am big on the organization side of things, and... You used the word linear before. There's a book way of running a hop yard, and it's you do this, and then you do this, and then you do this, and then you do this. And thinking about your yard more as a truly organic entity, and all
it's a system.
It's a system. Yeah. Thank you, a system. And all the things that it needs, you need to think about the yard that way, and you can do things a little out of order like this. This is a good order, but out of order to what your mind might think when you're only thinking about the hops. Your yard isn't a tool to give you hops and then move on to the next part of the process. The yard needs its own tender love and care. And to your point, put the hops aside for a bit, store them, and make sure your yard's in good shape for next year.
The thing that really gets a lot of row croppers in trouble when they go into hops is that they think about farming like they're farming corn or wheat or beans, an annual system where it is very linear. No, you don't do that with a specialty perennial crop. The things that you are doing now are going to affect the year and the year after that. So you have to go into it thinking about it as a integrated system where you have lots of, you know, individual moving parts that all happen. Some of them happen linearly, but they're all woven together and you can't separate them. You can't address one without the other. All right, there we go. Moving on. as we talked earlier, I'm like, I don't think this is going to take the whole time. As I look down, 35 minutes later. Oops. Hope you didn't have anything you wanted to talk about.
Well, no, just the usual silly market things going on. So you had sent me an article about, you know, I don't know if oxymoron's the right term here, but Italian style pilsners.
Yeah.
And okay. So
yeah.
Let's see. I'm looking for a good line here that explains what they're doing here. Some brewers are experimenting with hops from so usually pilsners are German or Czech pilsners and they have, you know, a very specific flavor to them. Some brewers are experimenting with hops from New Zealand or the US or elsewhere to lend richer or more fruity aromas or flavors. Well, you know what? Mm-hmm. That's not a pilsner, people.
Yeah. You know my take on this. That's why I sent it to you. Because I'm like, It's another way to tart up overhopped beer, in my opinion. I mean, I don't have a problem with somebody saying, I'm going to take a Pilsner malt and, you know, a Pils yeast, it's a lager, right? And I'm going to dry hop it because they're typically not dry hopped. Okay. I get it. That's your take on a style, right? Maybe it's the obsession of humans with needing to label everything. So it's like, now I can identify with a over hop, dry hop Pilsner. It's called an Italian Pilsner. I don't get it.
I don't know how the Italians got dragged into this either. Because it has nothing to do with anything there. And the funny thing is, I mean, you sent me this article, and I a brief glance, I said, oh, it's about Pilsners. This must be another article about, you know, the classical styles coming back. And then I look at it and go, ah, geez, no, just like that that Kolsch slushy one we were talking about a few weeks ago, where they took a perfectly good beer style and decided to muck with it and just steal the name for no good reason.
I hold this Italian Pilsner thing in higher regard than a Pilsner or than a Kolsch slushy. But Kolsch slushy just smacks to me of, we got all this old beer we got to get rid of, so let's turn it into something. I think that the concept of, you know, dry hopping a Pilsner with American and New Zealand hops is just another trend of the obsession with more. You know, it's got to more. Nobody's done this before. Again, going back to Brews Brothers, right? IPAs are things brewers make when they're all out of good ideas. So now we're going to take a Pilsner that's light and crisp and well-balanced, and we're going to dry hop it. And you know it's not a light hand. They're going to dry hop the hell out of it.
Oh, yeah. And I feel bad for the consumer who gets talked into that, because, you know, we've always talked about our, you know, John and the others behind the bar saying, hey, if you liked that double IPA, try this Pilsner. Trust me, you got to try this. They try it, they like it. Then they go out somewhere to a restaurant and they're trying to pick a beer and they say, oh, I'm going to have that Pilsner. I had one the other day I liked. And they try it and go, this is not what I liked.
Yeah, they get a Pils or Kel or something like that. And they're like, oh, God, what's wrong with this? Mm-hmm. It smells like they boiled hot dogs in it.
Which, in fairness, depending on the restaurant, they might have.
They might. That's true. Very true. I don't know. I mean, I sent it to you more out of, you know, tongue in cheek when I sent you that article. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it is also... disingenuous. I don't know.
When all of the weird styles were coming out of IPAs, though, I've kind of felt okay with IPA taking the brunt of having to carry all that weight. But now that they're going out into other styles, other traditional styles, and messing with the names, it just bothers me. It bothers me for that example I just gave, that folks that really don't know beer and only know the IPA method of learning how to drink, which is what I think our latest generation is growing up on, unfortunately, when they're not busy vaping. Now you've got folks that really are never going to learn the difference between these proper beer styles, because everything is just an overhopped mess, but they all are using the nomenclature.
But would they actually take the time to learn about those beer styles? Is that what they're in it for?
But they won't, because the one time they try a Pilsner, after that Pilsner, they're going to go, this tastes like boiled hot dogs.
I don't know. Ask Asa.
Yes.
See what she has to say about it.
We will.
Don't be like James.